Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Brian Lynn, and Pete Musto. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Jill Robbins and John Russell will have this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Egypt Air officials now say they were mistaken when they reported the wreckage of Flight 804 had been found in the Mediterranean Sea. The official said rescue workers found life vests and pieces of plastic. Egypt Air Vice Chairman Ahmed Adel told CNN that none of what was found is part of the plane. He said the search and rescue is still going on. The plane, an Airbus 320, was carrying 66 people, including 56 passengers. It was traveling from Paris to Cairo. Greek air traffic controllers spoke with the pilot when it entered Greek airspace. They lost contact with the flight when it was very near or entering Egyptian airspace. Egyptian officials discussed the crash on Thursday while search operations continued in the Mediterranean Sea. The country's aviation minister said the crash was more likely caused by a terrorist attack than mechanical failure. French President François Hollande spoke to reporters about the incident. "We must ensure that we know everything on the causes of what happened. No hypothesis is ruled out or favored," he said. Hollande said the French government is in contact with Egyptian and Greek officials to help with the search. Greece's defense minister said the plane made sudden turns and dropped sharply before disappearing from radar. Scott Hamilton of Leham Aviation Consultancy spoke to VOA. He said it is highly unusual for an airplane to disappear when at an altitude of 11,000 meters. Hamilton said it either typically indicates a catastrophic failure, catastrophic emergency of some kind, or as we know from not too long ago, a bomb could go off. But you just have to be cautious and not jump to any conclusions at this point. He added that search teams would be ultimately looking for the airplane's main records and black boxes. The passengers were from France, Egypt, and 9 other nations, including Britain, Iraq, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia. Passengers from Algeria, Canada, Chad, Portugal, and Sudan are also among the missing. In October 2015, a Russian passenger plane crashed in the Sinai Peninsula. Russia says an explosive device caused the crash. A group linked to the Islamic State militant group claimed responsibility. I'm Katie Weaver.
China is telling the United States military to stop gathering intelligence along China's coast after an incident involving aircraft from the two countries. The U.S. Defense Department described an unsafe meeting between a U.S. military airplane and two Chinese fighter jets. It said the Chinese jets intercepted the plane on a routine patrol Tuesday in international airspace over the South China Sea. A Chinese Foreign Ministry official said the jets followed and observed the U.S. plane in accordance with international law. Foreign Ministry spokesman Hong Li said the Chinese aircraft continually kept a safe distance and did not take any dangerous actions. He said the intercept took place near China's southern province of Hainan and that it was a serious threat to Chinese airspace. The incident comes at a time of growing concern in East Asia over China's territorial claims. China claims most of the South China Sea, but Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam also have claims to parts of the sea. China has been developing artificial islands in the disputed waters, complete with runways and military bases. Earlier this month, China ordered fighter jets into the air after a U.S. Navy ship sailed close to a disputed area in the South China Sea. Two Chinese fighter jets and three warships followed the U.S. ship and told it to leave the area. Tensions over the competing territorial claims are expected to be discussed during U.S. President Barack Obama's visit to Asia. Obama will become the first U.S. president to visit Hiroshima, Japan, where the United States carried out the world's first atomic bomb attack at the end of World War II. He will also visit Vietnam. Some observers believe the incident on Tuesday is not directly related to tensions over the South China Sea. William Chung is a senior fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies in Singapore. He said the Chinese government's reaction seems to be part of a dispute over military surveillance flights. I'm Brian Lin.
American scientists announced this week that genetically engineered food is generally safe for humans and the environment. The National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine found that changing the genetics of what we eat does not carry the health risks that opponents claim. The Associated Press noted that the growth of genetically engineered crops has yet to lead to a jump in food production, as supporters claimed. The report did not find any conclusive evidence of environmental problems from such crops. Genetic engineering is the technology of changing the genes of living things. The changed gene directs the plant or other organism to do things it normally does not do. The process of changing the genetic structure of food crops has been debated for some time. Such foods are commonly called GMOs, for genetically modified organisms, or GEs, meaning genetically edited. For nearly 30 years, biologists have used genetic engineering to modify plant characteristics, like, for example, increasing vitamin levels. They also developed GE crops to resist insects and herbicide products. Farmers use herbicides to kill unwanted plants. The Science Advisory Board released its 408-page report on Tuesday. The group's members said that they recognize it is difficult to measure the indirect or long-term effects in health or the environment. They said it is important not to make wide, far-reaching statements about genetically engineered foods. The group did note that scientists do not agree about whether the chemical glyphosate causes cancer. Glyphosate is a herbicide that is often used with genetically engineered crops. The scientists called for more investigation into the end product of foods made from GE crops. They said officials should spend less time worrying about how such crops are created. The report said there is no evidence of environmental problems from genetically engineered crops, but pesticide resistance is a problem. Farmers use chemical pesticides to keep insects and other animals from killing their crops. Most of the modified plants being grown are soybean, cotton, corn, and canola. When farms began growing GE crops instead of traditional ones, there was no substantial change in the amount produced, the report said. Production of crops in general is increasing. The report said U.S. Department of Agriculture data fails to show that GMO crops are increasing at a higher rate. There are other researchers who still oppose genetically engineered foods. Charles Benbrook formerly worked at Washington State University, but now is a private consultant. He said he feels the risks of such foods are more serious than some scientists do, and that the human health studies are not enough. Some groups opposed to genetically engineering foods criticized the report before it came out. Food and Water Watch criticized the National Academy for taking money from biotechnology companies and using pro-GMO scientists to write its reports. The Associated Press said none of the groups financing the study have direct connections to the agricultural biotechnology industry. The Academy said outside experts read the findings and committee members were cleared of financial conflicts of interest. I'm Pete Musto.
Economists are debating the possibility that China's economy could have a hard landing or lengthy recession. For most Chinese businesses, the slowdown has become a reality. The question that concerns those businesses most is how to keep going. In the Chinese city of Yiwu, sellers are feeling the effects of a slowing economy, but they also are finding ways to weather the storm. Henry Ko's family has been in the porcelain business for many years. The family business was good when China's economy was booming. But now, the economy is growing at its slowest rate in more than 25 years. The market for dinner plates and other porcelain products is weak. Over the past 2 years, Henry Ko says, sales have dropped by 20%. To keep afloat, he has cut production and packaging costs, even his own profits. He sells porcelain products in Yiwu's huge wholesale market. The Long Trade Mall area is home to thousands of storefront businesses. Yiwu is in Zhejiang Province, near the Chinese ports of Shanghai and Ningbo. Many companies consider Yiwu a good place to do business because of the support and freedom the local government gives sellers. This includes reduced taxes and less interference in business. The area has a long history of being a base for traders. China's Communist Party-led government tried to suppress the business activity, but later let trading expand when market reforms began in the 1980s. Today, Yiwu is known to some as the small commodities wholesale capital of the world. Almost everything and anything that is made in China can be found and bought in the city. From Yiwu, goods are shipped overseas, to Africa, the Middle East, Europe, and America. Henry Ko's business is international. He has buyers in the Middle East and Europe. He says sellers can do little to change the overall environment they are facing. However, he is finding ways to protect his business, including making specialized products for his customers. The number of shoppers was low during several recent visits to the trade mall. Many shop owners just sat in their stores. Some watched Korean soap operas, while others spoke with friends. In some stores, however, traders from Africa, Azerbaijan, Turkey, and South America seemed in a hurry to place orders. But increasingly, as the cost of business rises, a storefront can only do so much. Creativity, however, is a sure way to keep going. Clock designer Zhong Fangzhong sells his specialty timepieces at Yiwu's Trade Mall. His timepieces are also selling well in Japan, South Korea, Turkey, and Iran. Getting legal protections for his products has helped his business, he said. He has also found the Internet a way to keep his business developing. We are using other avenues, such as Tmall and Taobao, and that has helped to make up for some sales. Trade overseas has slipped significantly since last year, by as much as 30 to 50%, Zhong said. But not everyone is willing or able to change to do business online. Shui Yaqing is a salesman for the e-commerce company Alibaba. He tries to help shop owners sell their products through the Internet. He said that from his work, he can see the effect the slowing economy is having. Some shop owners are losing money, not making any profits, and mounting up debt. And because of that, some are only here for a while, and then have to shut down their businesses, Shui said. He hopes to get them online, but not all are willing. Some have been doing business offline for many years, and from their perspective, they don't need it, he said. And with a growing number of stores online, competition is increasingly fierce. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is what's trending today. You can order plenty of sweet, tasty treats at Leon's Frozen Custard in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The restaurant's many offerings include hot fudge sundaes, banana splits, and root beer floats. But you cannot order anything in Spanish. Leon's Frozen Custard opened in 1942. At that time, not too many people in Milwaukee spoke Spanish. But now, many people in the neighborhood close to Leon's do. This week, people started talking about the restaurant on Facebook. That is because the owner of the restaurant, Ron Schneider, wants his workers to speak English all the time, even if both the employee and customer are Spanish speakers. When news of the policy came out, Schneider told a television station that he would prefer if the employees would simply speak English and encourage those customers who can to speak English. Schneider said he is not discriminating against customers who cannot speak English. He just wants English to be the language spoken at his business. But people reacting on Facebook are not so sure. Gretchen Thiessen said that being able to speak the language of your customers is an asset. Another Milwaukee resident wondered what business was like in the 1940s when Leon's Frozen Custard first opened. In those days, Milwaukee was home to many German and Polish immigrants who did not speak English. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
We judge people by the way they speak and the grammar they use. Listen to several Americans from different regions speak. Don't worry too much about what they are saying. Just listen to their different speaking styles. Can you guess where they are from?
What's this about? Why is there only one woman?
The one who will be back on Broadway.
The difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
You know, I'll wake up sometimes from a dream and think, I better get up and write that down or I'll forget it.
Dude, you get the best barrels ever, dude.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
A moment that will live forever. You're seeing the destruction of the Berlin Wall.
How is it getting up and being there and getting your hair fried and the eyelashes and all that stuff?
I'm exhausted.
Everybody relates rodeo with kind of a wild, energizing experience, something that gets out of control.
As you listened to these different speakers, you probably started to form ideas about them. The minute you open your mouth, you are giving clues about yourself, where you grew up, with whom you grew up, and where you went to school.
If you study English in the United States, you are probably learning standard American English, the kind of English used in books, business, government, and school. But there are millions of native speakers who have their own vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation that is different from standard American English. Linguists call these non-standard dialects. Basically, a non-standard dialect is a dialect of a language that is not taught in school. There are dozens of regional varieties of American English. People disagree about what makes a distinct dialect or accent. But it is clear that a farmer from North Dakota does not sound like a police officer in Boston. And a lawyer from Seattle does not sound like a fisherman from Louisiana. Some people look down on certain regional accents and dialects. They might describe them as slang, ungrammatical, or broken English. Dr. Richard Epstein is a linguist from Rutgers University in Camden, New Jersey. He says it is a mistake to judge people by the way they speak.
When we hear someone use grammar that we think of as perhaps not standard, it's very easy to judge them as uneducated, and maybe they're not too bright, but that's a stereotype. There are many people who speak non-standardly who are extremely bright.
One of the largest non-standard dialects in the United States is what linguists call African American Vernacular English, or AAVE. It is spoken by some African Americans, especially those living in large cities. A small number of white teenagers also speak AAVE, Epstein says. AAVE follows the grammar rules of standard American English, with a few exceptions. For example, AAVE speakers might drop the to be verb in the present tense. Instead of the standard, "the coffee is cold," some speakers say, "the coffee cold." Dr. Epstein explains.
So, of course, white folks who don't know African American dialect raise their hands up in despair and say, "Oh, this is ungrammatical, it's illogical. How can you possibly have a sentence with no verb? It doesn't make sense." But of course, it makes perfect sense. The verb be in the present tense doesn't really give you any information of any use at all. And so in many languages, not just African American dialect, they don't have the verb be, or if they have it, they don't use it. So the most logical language of all in our folklore is Latin, and Latin frequently also left out the verb be in the present tense. So there's nothing illogical or ungrammatical about saying the coffee cold.
It is common for people to change dialects for different social situations. Someone who speaks AAVE at home might speak standard American English at work. Sometimes, even the rich and powerful adopt non-standard grammar. Former President George W. Bush grew up as the son of a senator and went to Harvard and Yale. But when he was campaigning, he spoke like a regular Joe, or someone from the working class. Listen to his speaking style at a campaign rally in the southern state of Alabama in 2006.
For those of you who are stuffing the envelopes and putting up the signs and getting on the telephones and turning people out to vote, I want to thank you in advance for what you're going to do for this excellent governor.
Notice how the former president dropped the letter G at the end of a word. He shortens going to gonna and want to wanna. George W. Bush was speaking with a working-class Southern accent, even though he grew up in New England. Bush's critics said that his informal speaking style showed that he was not very smart. Dr. Epstein says President Bush used non-standard grammar to his advantage. George W. Bush is not alone. Many politicians change their speaking style to try to build a connection with their audience.
Dr. Epstein says the way we speak is part of who we are. He says, not everyone who speaks a standard dialect is intelligent. And not everyone who speaks a non-standard dialect is uneducated.
But it's very clear that we speak the way the people who we most cherish and love most, the way they speak. And our language is a sign of who we are as much as our religion, much more than it is a sign of our intelligence. There is no link between dialect and intelligence.
I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Dustin Reynolds.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.